Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
No commercial! There isn't any. They don't exist. Nobody made one. Not even the 2005 one.
Not even Mad Magazine?
No, none of it.
That's very disappointing. Nobody made commercials for Spy versus Spy for any of these systems in any of its iterations.
Really?
Yeah, it's all silent. Just like the cartoons
that's
themselves.
That's okay. It's just like the, I was about to say, just like the Mad Magazine. You didn't really, it was kind of... It's almost a secret. You don't want anybody to know that you're buying heavy metal in Mad Magazine, right? It's a secret.
Because heavy metal had boobs in it.
Oh, they had boobs in it? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they sure did. Anyway, hi, everybody. Welcome to Play Retro. I'm one of your hosts, Scott Johnson, and I read a lot of Mad Magazines. In fact, I used to read a ton of them back in the day, and I was a big fan of The White Spy. All right? He got screwed a lot by the Black Spy. Not cool. Yeah. Maybe you'll find a cherry bomb in your toilet later, Brian Dunaway. So let it be written. So let it be done.
I will watch out for splash damage. Oh, and I'm your other host, Brian Dunaway. And I think this White Spy guy is trying to kill me. And by God, I think he finds the idea quite hilarious. Yeah, I'm going to put a cherry bomb in my toilet, huh, White Spy? Well, let's just see how funny he thinks it is when I hide this cartoonishly large bomb in his couch cushions. Oh, I get it now. Yeah, I see his point. This really is hilarious. Looks like somebody already left a bomb in this couch. Oh, I'm dead. Now I must fly away with my little wings.
Yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds like Spy versus Spy to me. We'll get into it. We'll talk about the NES game and what came after. That's all coming up in a minute. But before we do... Let's discuss a couple of things. So I went down a weird rabbit hole because of our last episode. Play Retro is entirely responsible for this. I went into detailed reasons as to all of this on Core this week. I will reiterate what happened here because we covered and played a bunch of
What is Core? What is that?
Core is a video game show all about video games that are not old. They're the new ones you play.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Go ahead and get shared.
Yeah. That's how that goes. Yeah. So anyway, I'm on this thing and, we're talking about what we played for the week and all of that. And because I played so much Advance Wars 1 and 2 and went back and played some Fire Emblem and a bunch of sort of strategic RPGs, turn-based combat, all that fun stuff. I got in a mood. So I ended up playing, here's all I played this week. I played a bunch of that on my Amberneck, old school. And then I played both two Namco Bandai games, or Bandai Namco, I guess is the order. I played Tales of Arise and the latest in the Tales series of RPGs, Japanese RPGs. And I also played a ton of Scarlet Nexus, came out a couple years ago, also from the same devs, which is more of like a futuristic Matrix kind of RPG, similar thing.
I actually played that.
So now I'm just a fat sucker for these things. I'm trying to finish a Final Fantasy VII remake so that I can get ready to get Rebirth, which just came out last week. And I'm kind of hooked on the whole scene. And then today, Unicorn Overlord comes out on every platform but PC, which is annoying.
You say that as though I should know what the crap you're talking about. Unicorn, I'm typing Unicorn.
Overlord, not Overload.
Overlord.
Right. Oh, my Lord.
All right, let me see what this is. Oh, what the crap is this? This looks great.
This is basically, if you were to make... Well, they make modern ones, so I shouldn't say it this way. Yeah. But it's like, here's Fire Emblem, but here's a new take on it. So this is Vanillaware and the folks over at Atlas or Altus. Atlas?
I'm going to say Atlas. Yes.
I think it's Atlas.
You're right, because Atlas is usually A-T-L-A-S, but this is A-T-L-U-S.
Yeah, published by Sega. Anyway, this is a new one of these, and it's getting just like raves from everyone I've talked to who have played it. Anyone who's bought it, the reviews are all off the charts.
Well,
can't wait to play this game.
If you put unicorn in the title of your game, I'm probably going to play it. Look at this, Scott.
I don't even know if there are unicorns in it. That's the funny thing about these games. They name them the stupidest things.
Yeah.
Like, what's Tactics Ogre? It's a tactics game. That's close. But the ogre part, it's not really in there. Final Fantasy Tactics, that makes sense to me. It's Final Fantasy or whatever. But games like Tales of Arise and Scarlet Nexus, I mean, they're all BS names. That's how these work.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, if you put unicorn in your title, I'm still going to look at it. And if you didn't notice, you can play the demo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Last week's Triangle Strategy, that was not last week, last year, there was a game called Triangle Strategy that came out, which is a stupid name. That's just the way these things are when they come overseas. But I'm very much looking forward to it. It's downloading on my PS5 as we speak. And that's where I'll be playing it this time around, because they don't have a PC version. I would love to play this on my Steam Deck. I'm pissed that it's not there yet, but I'll figure it out.
I'll be honest with you. I have a really hard time vetting these games because they're all really slick looking and well polished. And I can't always tell between good content, good gaming, just from the visuals. You used to could tell. It's like, oh, look at the great visuals in this game. There was a lot of money involved. And therefore, they probably put some gameplay in here. And I can never tell because this game looks gorgeous and beautiful. But I've downloaded games like this before and went, there's nothing here. This is the most vacuous piece of gaming I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, that's why you got to read. That's why you got to read reviews and interviews.
Yeah.
And
what's IGN and say about it? Like 120? What's the score? Well, on that
and
thing?
their new 10 zero to 10 scale, or their current 0 to 10 scale, which they put back into place in 2020. That game is currently sitting at a whopping 9 out of 10, which is pretty good. And they rave about it. Everybody I've talked to, every review site I've read, I've yet to read anything negative about it. So I'm going in. I'm going all in. I'm getting my unicorn out. I'm going to be an overlord over it. And off we go.
I just need to know, am I going to be managing, unicorns? That's all I really need.
No, just units. Just think about,
am I playing as a unicorn? And if I am, am I ripped? That's also kind of what I want to know.
There's another game on Steam made by a single developer.
Was it called Horse Abs?
No.
What it's called?
It's called something Symphony. Last Symphony? I don't remember the name. Anyway, it's basically one of these. Also very good. And one of the things they do, this game will do, which is instead of it just being like, here's a horse is a unit, it's a unit that is maybe the horse is representative of, but it's actually made up of the horse guy or, a knight of some sort, a healer and two archers. And you can kind of control and say, hey, archers, only fire if the enemy has a such and such mage. If not, just protect the healer or whatever. Like you can kind of be more intricate in choosing that stuff. In terms of story and stuff, I'm sure it'll be just chock full of anime nonsense like all these games are, which I've come to appreciate. That's fine. I'm getting it today. I'll let you know next week what I think.
Let me know, because I'm looking down here. I have scrolled down to the Monarch Edition, which is a collector's edition, and they have a 16-bit arranged music album as part of that. Will they sell that separately? Because Brian does like some 16-bit arranged music albums.
I would too. And Vanillaware's been making games like this since the NES days. They've worked with Square. They've worked with, everybody. Namco.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm glad you brought this to my attention, because I would have seen this and skipped right over it, because it looks like a bunch of eye candy that's probably going to have no good gameplay. But you're telling me gameplay.
I'm telling you gameplay first in this case. It's pretty too, but it's all about gameplay. Also, rest in peace, Akira Toriyama, who just passed away yesterday. It's horrible, sad news. He was only 67 or something. That's too young. He had a brain aneurysm of some kind, but we know him from all the Dragon Quest games and his art design and that. Of course, anything to do with Dragon Ball Z and all that, that's all his. Yes. And in particular, a game that a lot of people revere as one of the greatest of its generation, if not the greatest, and that's Chrono Trigger. He was the art design behind all of that. And if you really want to see his work showcased in a more modern way, play Dragon Quest XI, because That is a big, beautiful 3D up close in your face game that really shows off his style. And it's just a horrible loss. There's a whole generation of people who are just like, man, I grew up on his stuff. What the hell is this? So anyway, go back to episode 46 if you want to get our Dragon Quest vibes. Mm-hmm. And then next week, we'll tell you a little bit later, but I'll tease it now. Next week, we're going to talk about a very important game in the history of JRPGs that he was directly involved in. We already did a pivot.
Yeah. I'm very excited.
Yeah, we did pivot. Sorry, everybody who was looking forward to another thing that we also pivoted from a week ago. But it's our pivot game, and we'll keep pivoting on it until we don't need to anymore.
We'll pivot until we can't pivot. Pivot. Thanks, Ross.
Hey, Brian, what's going on at the Southeast Game Exchange? Are you going?
Oh, that's right. This past week, I went last year, the Southeast Game Exchange that happens in Greenville, South Carolina, just up the road from me, has started making their announcements for this year's show, July the 6th through the 7th. It's pretty cool. I found a lot of retro stuff last year. I plan on finding some more good stuff this year. And last year, I didn't go early enough because I thought, oh, this is just going to be a small gathering of a few people. It's just at the convention center. Wrong. It was a pretty big deal. And they even had guests when I went last year. I was like, what kind of guests would they have? I didn't get a chance to find out because, unfortunately, for me, I took everybody with me, and there was no way they were going to stay there all day while I went around and nerded it up. So this year, I went ahead and started making plans. There is going to be a few guests there. There's going to be a David Hater, I believe his name is. I see some Metal Gear stuff.
Of course, that's David Hater. That's what he does.
Yeah, that's right.
Here's some of those now. I'll play some of those now for you.
Yeah, give me that. Give me some.
Make me feel alive again.
That's not him. Hold on.
Snake.
No. Give me your... Hold on. This is not who I wanted. Hold on. Okay, how about this one?
Yes!
Metal Gear quotes. Here we go.
War has changed.
That's him.
There you go.
Yeah, let's get him.
Awesome. It's like one of my Japanese anime.
You're pretty good.
There he is. You're pretty good. That's pretty good.
See, there. I'm gonna talk to them. I'm gonna hopefully get to see that guy. I'm gonna get to see Jason Griffith. I hope that would be Shadow the Hedgehog from the Shadow the Hedgehog video game franchise from 2003 to 2009.
Yeah,
looks like I don't know why somebody from some rando number keeps calling me, but I'm not voting for your particular candidate.
Nope.
Lisa Ortiz is gonna be there, voice actress as well. Roles in English anime adaptations, Amy Rose in Sonic X. We're going to have some Sonic love there. But the thing I'm most excited about, Howard Scott Warshaw. Who's that, you may say?
He makes video games, that guy.
He makes video games, especially the ones of the Atari 2600 variety. You may have heard of Raiders of the Lost Ark. How about Yar's Revenge? And if that's not good enough for you, his headlining game, this listed on here, is E.T. the Extraterrestrial. That's right.
Gosh, I wonder why that leads the pack. I wonder if there's any controversy around that game that might...
If you can't...
You know.
Yeah. If you can't be famous, you can be notorious, I suppose. So there you go. E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
What an ironic thing, though. He made the worst and the best games of that machine. He made Yar's Revenge is easily the best game the 2600 ever saw. And E.T. is easily the most notorious dump ever taken by anyone.
He was a victim of his own success since he'd gotten Spielberg's attention, right? Because the Raiders of the Lost Ark thing, he had a great game with Yar's Revenge, and Spielberg was going to be involved with the E.T. thing and everything, and he was very excited about the video game, and so was Atari, put a lot of pressure. This is when we were still just doing one-person development on video games, and so had a rush for the Christmas season. So if you don't know all that whole big story, there's tons of documentaries out there, but Howard Scott Warshaw went through some crap and came out of the other side, and He's still here, man.
You should have gone and got a speaking gig at this thing. Everybody can come see you there.
And that's right. They come see me. There still says more guests coming. Maybe I'm the future guest.
Maybe we'll you're see. The future guest. I would go to that. That would be a fun thing. Where is this again? What's the city?
Oh, this is in Greenville. It's in South Carolina. It's right up the road from me. It's going to be, I believe, at the Greenville Convention Center again. It is going to be between July the 6th, the 7th. Last year, I just went for a couple of hours. Yeah. I could not stay for the 2 days or anything, but I'll probably stay at least a full day. It's going to be on that Saturday and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturday and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sunday.
Nice. All right, watch
lots
for it.
Lots of retro gaming stuff there. It's way overload for me last year. I'm very excited.
Yeah.
Now they know what I expect.
Well, now if you live there, mm-hmm. get on it.
Shall we play a game?
We shall indeed. That game we shall play is Spy versus Spy. Yes, today we're talking about a game that a lot of you for months have been asking us to cover.
Yeah.
Maybe since we even started the show, I felt like we got Spy versus Spy requests.
Is that you would think that everybody in the universe loves Spy versus Spy, but I'm beginning to think maybe just a few very passionate people love this game. And, you know, they're not wrong. But yeah. I think it's just it's a smaller group than I thought. But man.
It's considered a classic by many. I see it on the top 50 NES games of all time. This one is often on those lists. So I think it deserves its place there. But this is, of course, inspired by the comic strip, if you want to call it that, that would show up in Mad Magazine. They always had a little spread. And it was, a favorite of people's. It was always like, well, how's one of these spies going to screw over the other one in today's episode of the magazine? And the game capitalizes on that idea. It's got some strategy. It's got a little platforming. It's got some competitive stuff. There's some weird punching that goes on in this game.
Weird punching and stabbing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Stab, stab, punch, punch. It is kind of ugly whatever. It's probably fine, but.
It definitely uses every color that is in the Nintendo palette, because this game is actually kind of punching above its weight class for the NES platform, to be honest with you. It's the most fun when you're playing against other people, because it is a split screen. You got to get a screen on top, a screen on bottom. You're the white spy on top, you're the black spy on the bottom. If you don't have a friend, you can play against the computer, but essentially you're running around, in this case, the embassy where you've been airdropped to, and you're running through the different rooms. And you're looking underneath and behind everything, looking for items so that you can escape to the plane. In the meantime, you have your arsenal of goodies, such as buckets and springs and all kinds of practical jokes that will murder kill your opponent.
Yeah. Mechanically, where it punches above its weight, in my opinion, it isn't so much graphically, right. But mechanically, there's a lot of stuff going on, and it's a lot more complex than your average NES game. The fact that you are both on the same screen at the same time doing this stuff, trying to outwit each other, kind of unique, especially for the time.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't a lot of that sort of thing going around. It sounded a bit like this, by the way. It's an NES game. It's what you expect, you know.
Yeah.
Lots of goofy music.
You might be thinking, oh, you're both on the same screen. Then you have to put some cardboard between you so that you can hide the other person's screen. This game moves so freaking fast. There's no time to look at the other person because you're so busy trying to go through your different things to place traps for your opponent that it's ridiculous. When you go to another room, it's a race. It's a race to find a briefcase first, and then to find the items that you've been tasked with within that particular area. And you've got to get all of it, and then you got to get to the plane. So you're racing against your opponent, and in the meantime, you're trying to set up booby traps to slow them down. If they get killed, either by one of your traps or by fighting fisticuffs or sometimes umbrella cuffs, whatever you want to fight with, then they disappear and they get a time penalty. That might be a good time for you to take advantage of that and watch your opponent as they do things, but you do get a time penalty, and you lose your objects you've collected, and they're redistributed randomly throughout the map. Like I said, this game is really way more complex than you think it is.
Yeah, there's a lot more going on, and also these rooms are kind of nondescript. Sure, there's an orange one with a bed in one place and a shelf in another, but there might be five of those that kind of look the same. So there's never a point where the other player is going to go, oh, I know where he must be.
I mean,
you might get lucky and guess, and occasionally you will cross each other's paths. That's where things get real weird, because you basically have a little mini fighting game. Almost reminds me of an old NES like hockey game fight a little bit.
Yeah, just take some sticks out and beat each other.
Yeah, you just start swinging, and whoever is left standing or whatever, you get to be in the room sometimes when one of your traps gets sprung, and you get to see the other guy die. That's, of course, a fantastic moment. And I also felt like I was only playing AI in my playthrough this week, but I felt like there were a lot of chances to catch up. It's not like the game screwed you after your first death. You could figure out a way to make up for it. And
The smaller maps, you can pull up the map by hitting the select button. If you're playing the NES version, by the way, this is platform just about any 8-bit computer system you can imagine is everywhere, including the Game Boy Color, which, by the way, I really like that version.
I like that version, too. I don't know if it's because it played so small. I don't know what it was. It just looked better. Tight.
It just felt a little more, and that was years later, because the Game Boy Color, that's way down the line after the NES. So they tricked some stuff out. But playing against the computer in the beginning, you're in some levels that are only like 6 rooms. Mm-hmm. So you have to really be on your toes with the AI. Later on, you get into big sections that may have multiple floors where you got to go up and down elevators. And that gets a little bit better, what you said, with the catch up part, where it's like if you get behind and you get confused because you can't find the freaking briefcase, which is randomly sorted in all the different rooms. Mm-hmm. And like I said, the briefcase is important because once you get that, then you can start collecting multiple things. Otherwise, you have to carry one item. You'll go to another area and you'll have to put it down and then, pick up something else. And it can be a little frustrating there. But
do you remember the cartoon rooms that was on for a while? I don't remember. I think it was mostly a Mad TV thing.
There was a Mad TV. They had little skits and stuff, little in-betweens, very appropriate for that. And Antonio Proheus was our a Cuban, what's the proper word? He escaped Cuba during a very dangerous time and made it to New York and made it to Mad Magazine. And he was a cartoonist in Cuba. Mm-hmm. And he had to flee because of that, because they didn't take criticism too well at the top in Cuba, apparently. So Antonio Proheus had to escape and bring us this Spy versus Spy.
Yeah, and he was still around to see this game get made. That must have been a pretty cool thing for him. Passed away in 1998, so about 10 or 11 years later, 12 years later, or something like that. But he's one of those dudes where in the heyday of Mad Magazine, you look forward to a couple of things: Don Martin spread, whatever that was going to be, whatever Spy versus Spy was going to be, and then whatever Mort Drucker was doing for that month's like parody TV or movie that he would do.
Al Jaffe doing the fold-ins.
That stuff. Like, there were certain things that when you bought that magazine, you could count on these 3 or 4 like regular things that were always delightful and wonderful. I got hooked on that thing. I bought every issue I could buy and I loved it. And this was part of that. I still don't quite understand the character decision to make the characters basically look like birds with hats on. I don't understand that.
Yeah, they look very much like the crows. They reminded me of the crows from a lot of the cartoons of that era. But yeah, I used to think that their hats were pointy. And their faces were pointy, but then I went back and said, oh, my memory's incorrect. They have flat type of hats, but they got these long beak things. Like you said, they're almost like ghost or something. There is a very interesting character design, though.
Yeah, it's very weird. They're almost, they remind me of, those Plague Doctor masks a little bit.
Yeah, oh, that's a good one. Maybe that's what he was kind of thinking, more of a mass thing.
Maybe there. Yeah, hard to say.
Sergio Aragones, how you say it? Or Aragorns?
Aragones is what I always said.
Aragones. There you go. Sergio Aragones. That guy did the in-between stuff. Man, yeah. I collected those Gru comics for...
Oh, Gru was awesome.
For a while.
Yeah, Gru was great. Yeah. The marginal stuff on Mad was great. He is still around, still with us, I think, that dude. And these two were pals, right? They hung around.
Yeah. Yeah, they hung around. They did. Matter of fact, Sergio had talked in several interviews about being mistaken as the guy who did Spy versus Spy. Even though he did occasionally include in the doodles, he would include in the little marginals and stuff, he would include that stuff. But
he was a Spanish-born, born in San Mateo, Castellón, Spain.
Yes.
And then, those two probably got along well.
It's easy. Yeah, exactly. It's easy for us Americans to go, he's kind of Spanish, and so is the other guy. It's probably the same guy.
Yeah, it might be the same dude.
It's probably the same
guy. He's still around. He's 86 and kicking it still, so congrats to Sergio.
Yeah. I want more Spy versus Spy, though. This game was, I'll be honest, when you started playing earlier this week, I was like, oh, God, what did I get myself into? Because I couldn't get past the first level. The AI was just brutal. I was just like, as soon as I was still trying to figure out how to do stuff. Okay, let me start over. Let me tell you my first experience.
Do it.
My first experience was not the NES version. My first experience was the Commodore 64 version, which you can play on archive.org. If you go to the software section, look for Spy versus Spy. It didn't, the C64 version did not have all the tutorial stuff. So I basically, you just launch right into it and it's like, what is it? The other guy's running around doing stuff. The Black Spy's running around planting bombs, doing his little snicker thing. Find everything hilarious. I'm just walking around going, what am I supposed to do here? And it wasn't until I got to the NES version where I was like, oh, here's a nice little tutorial section. It'll break down each thing you need to do. Maybe even a little too hand-holdy.
Yeah.
Because it goes all the way from like, how do you move the character? Well, you do it like this. How do you open a door? You go do this. And but it did teach me how to do things and set traps, like set water buckets for the doors and set the time bombs. And it helped me understand that when I went into a room, if my character started flashing, you had 2 seconds to get out of there. You could set a time bomb and blow yourself up as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, if I was playing this now, I would definitely play the NES version, even though it's in a lot of different places. They ported this thing to a whole bunch of stuff because people love Spy versus Spy.
Yeah, Spy versus Spy is cool, man. And yes, they made it, you know, the newest game we ever got was in 2005. I think it's time. Let's get something going.
Even when I was doing research on this, as recently as a few months ago, I was seeing activity and chatter in Reddit forums and stuff. This is something that people really dig. Mm-hmm. I'm also curious how far this goes back, because a lot of things that I think of, like these two trying to kill each other and stuff, I mean, what is that permeated through a lot of our popular culture, especially in different cartoons and comics and everything? I was also trying to think, did this impact anything else in the gaming world? I kind of thought, is Among Us kind of...
Oh, interesting.
Spy versus Spy?
I mean, Among Us is basically... Among Us is that werewolf game. I mean, I can't even remember. Is it called Werewolf? I think so. Hold on.
Right.
Werewolf.
I mean, it's kind of like the idea of like, who's the drug dealer? But this, you know, you're stabbing people in the back. You're setting booby traps. That's what I really think of when I think of Spy versus
Here it
Spy.
Is. Werewolf card game with your friends. Yeah, Werewolf is basically Among Us. And it gets it from there, but there's a vibe. I agree with you. There's something there. I don't know what to call it, but there's something there. This obviously also, it's obvious that he was inspired a bit by Roadrunner, you know, Coyote Business, because that's another example of silent protagonist, antagonist running around doing shit to screw each other up. All the Acme traps and everything else. Like there's a very like throwback 40s Warner Brothers cartoon vibe to Spy versus Spy that I always enjoyed.
Can you imagine living it during the time, like the 50s and stuff that he was in Cuba? Because it was a point of power, right? So you had two big world powers that were sending spies constantly, you know, to that area to, you know, destabilize or, you know, just gather information, gather intel. Their lives had to be like almost day to day going, who's a spy?
Yeah, who is the spy?
Who's a spy? Who's a spy? So it's such a fun idea that is very. It was actually born from something very serious and very scary.
Yeah,
very scary.
The human history stuff is a pretty wild run. If you ever want to go dive deep into it, that's pretty nuts. Well, anyway, it's very good, and I would recommend at least looking at it to see where some of these cool mechanics are, because honestly, I think today would be a great time for some small, doesn't have to be a huge AAA game, just make a small indie game, get the license for it, shouldn't be hard, and make like a really fun stealth-based multiplayer, make it online even, then you don't even have two screens to worry about, you're just, you know, playing against people in other places, spruce it up, graphic it up, make it look nice, do some fun mechanical things. Hell, you might even be able to pull off something as popular as Among Us, I don't know. It's popular.
Yeah, I mean, your booby trap. What is more fun than trolling? I mean, this is the ultimate troll, right? What's more fun than trolling your friends?
Yeah.
Trolling them, we know it's like they get excited because they're looking for something. Turns out you killed them. How hilarious is it to kill your friends in a video game?
Oh, it's the best. Wouldn't you rather do that than anything else in this world?
Then they have to start all over again or penalized by having to wait. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, the ecstasy.
Yep. Did you play two or three, either of those?
I played a little bit of it. You can also play these on archive.org. All of these were a little hard to find this week. There's no real good place just to go to grab it. But yeah, you can play them all online. They're small enough that they run just fine. The video actually playing is from looks like the Commodore 64.
It's a Commodore version. Yeah, Commodore version.
People in the Commodore really like this game. This is the Commodore 64 people were sometimes very thirsty for some quality games, and anytime something quality came along, they definitely grabbed it up. But there was a 2 and a 3 for Spy versus Spy, and it just changed the pretty much the same gameplay mechanics. They just ended up being in different locales, like fun spy stuff, like the Island Caper or the Arctic Antics, like you would see James Bond doing. Mm-hmm. So in this case, though, it went a little further from just looking under things and collecting things to get your booby traps. You weren't automatically equipped with your booby traps. You had to like assemble them, like quicksand and kind of stuff.
Yeah, and you got kind of a toolbar off to the side, which you can choose from to do, you know, the stuff you had to do. I never played this, but I did see it running on a friend's Commodore at one point.
Yeah, the Trapulator.
And he was all kind of, I mean, this is just Commodore people back then, I don't know, but he was all kind of braggy about it. Just like, oh yeah, dude, you go ahead and play your NES one. This one over here, though, oh man.
Like, dude.
Yeah, it got bad.
This requires real concentration. You got to be a master at this. Yeah.
My problem with this one is it's not as, how do I put this? The animation's pretty rough in this one. It's not great.
Yeah, the quality definitely varies in the ports and things. The one we're looking at is pretty rough. But it does give you a little bit more information, like exactly when you're going to die, when you're fighting, gives you a little health bar and that kind of stuff. And there's more, the time is a little more important in this one than it was in the first one. There's still a time mechanic in the first one, but it's not so much here because you're really having to build booby traps, including stuff molts with sharks, maybe. Mm-hmm. I didn't get that far, but I saw a mention of it in
with sharks. Some of the instructions. Yeah. There's also, hey, everybody who likes winter levels, guess what? Good times. There's an Arctic setting where you slide around on slippery surfaces. Everyone's favorite thing to do in a video game, ice levels. I hate those. Go to hell. I hate those.
Well, really, it's
hate it.
I'm
don't like torn. It in Mario. Don't like it in anything where I got to get onto some ice and I can't move the same as the rest of the game. I don't like water levels for the same reason in platformers. It's like I've been learning how to jump and time all this stuff, and now you're making me swim through mud. This sucks. I hate that. Hate it. I don't think I'm alone in that. I'd love to hear back from people, but I don't think I'm alone. I think that's like common. I think people all.
Yeah, I think it's pretty common too, because it's something that has really tight controls suddenly has loosey goosey controls. It's like, why, why are you doing this?
You know what I would do? Here's what I want. No one's going to make this. This is what I want.
Right.
Adults. I don't want Adult Swim to make I mean, they already had a cartoon on Cartoon Network for a little while, so they can do this. Adult Swim makes a Spy versus Spy series, television series, animated series.
Right.
But instead of it, and it's very true to the original stuff. It's like these capers where one pulls one over on the other and it goes back and forth and all that. And they're short and whatever. That's all fine. I want it to be so disgustingly bloody when one of the spies gets killed. I want like visceral splatter explosion, popping eyeballs, whatever it takes to just get that Adult Swim slot at like 11 o'clock on a Friday. I want that show. I want it.
But Scott, how do they get away with that and not piss off the Comics Code Authority? You can't.
F them.
You can't do that. You gotta yeah, they're kind of dead, right?
They're dead anyway. That doesn't even matter anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. This is another passion of mine, Scott's. I don't know if people listening, if you're new to the show or the shows that me and Scott have done over the years, me and Scott both grew up on Mad Magazine, comic books, comics themselves, all those great artists, both inspired both by humor and art style of a lot of these, you know, comic artists and Mad Magazine artists. And I didn't realize that all those horror comics I grew up reading.
Yeah.
I got a big, so here's a little quick backstory. When I was a kid, 8, 9 years old, whatever, my aunt went up to the attic and she came down and said, hey, here's a literal trash bag full of comics, not well stored or anything, just a big trash bag, black trash bag of comics. So here you go. Have fun.
Yeah.
And I went through those things, and I read, that's when I first got my first touch of all comic books. And I read some of the superhero stuff, but the stuff I really loved was the EC comic stuff. That was all this horror and crime stuff. I'm like, oh my God, these are fantastic.
Yeah.
These are great. They're definitely not made for me, but they're great. And Mad Magazine stuff was in there. Didn't have any heavy metal. Going back and after going back and researching this a little bit, learning more about the Comic Code Authority this past week with Mad Magazine and how Mad Magazine started as a comic. But then when the Comics Code of Authority came along, they had to switch it to a magazine, which made it even raunchier, because when it first launched, it was very, you know, inward looking. It was the comic was looking inward at the industry, like superhero comics and stuff. Like Super Duperman was the first one that really struck as a parody. And actually, they got sued by DC and everything, made a big kerfuffle. But man, just seeing how they went to magazine and got away with so much more stuff. They just got away with so much more stuff.
Hell yeah. Those were Wild West days, man. Before somebody stepped in, it's a little like video games. They were getting pretty Wild West in the 90s, and then they had to self-regulate to get themselves out of that problem. But these days, you can do so much stuff. Go to freaking Netflix or anybody who's like doing animated projects. They don't care. There's no authority. It's just TV. No. It's either TVMA or it isn't. Like, you know, do what you're going to do.
And it's too bad. It's too bad. I didn't realize, and only now looking back at history, and you know, I lived through a lot of it, and only now looking back going, man, we got cut off at the knees because all those horror and crime books got gutted. EC pretty much just went out of business because of the Comic Code Authority, because they couldn't publish anything, and it dictated how comics would be aimed at kids for decades to come. And, you know, the whole comic book scene just got rid of all the adult stuff. And so we got gutted. And so we didn't mature very much until almost the 80s when that stuff kind of turned around again. And so we're a couple of decades behind of other countries, like, you know, European countries and Japan and all of their stuff there. They have a lot more mature content.
Oh yeah. They always did. It was like, you know, if you want to get some, you'd see Akira back in the day where much younger in the 80s. It was 85, whatever it was.
Right.
And Akira was just like, what are they doing over there? That is amazing. I need this in my life. And then nothing in America was really doing that. And then even like, I don't know, you could probably blame The Simpsons for this, but, you know, finally the idea that cartoons aren't 100% for children, that started to change around the early 90s. But real late compared to those guys. Like, we're slow on this stuff.
Bugs we are me. Slow on that kind of stuff. And that's fine. That's out. Fine.
It's not fine. It's bad. It sucks.
It's bad. It's definitely bad.
It's not fine. It's terrible. They should treat us better or something. I don't know. I have no skin in this game. I don't care. Everything's fine.
Yeah. Did you have Spy versus Spy, the video game back in the day? I didn't know.
The NES really game I did. Yeah. I had that one. Yeah. I think my dad bought it actually. He was really into it.
Nice.
Yeah. I think that maybe was a good indicator of like that game's ability to be more than just a button mashy mess, you know, just like a fun arcade kind of experience. There was more to it. There was depth to it. And that's what he wanted. More of, or what he was interested in. I was more of a, you know, give me Duck Hunt kind of guy at the time. But I feel like I have evolved to really appreciate what these kinds of games were and did and are.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hard to find a game today where you're like, oh, this is clearly the spiritual successor of Spy versus Spy. But there are plenty of games with like intricate systems like this that are really fun to play. I mean, honestly, Here's a good category that I think maybe owes itself a little bit to its legacy, and that would be like the two cooking games. What are they called?
Overcooked.
Overcooked 1 and 2. That's it.
Yeah.
That's another. There's other ones too. There's this new one about fixing cars. You can do co-op. Those are more co-op experiences, but also you can sort of screw with each other. But even games like, you know, Towerfall, which is this awesome PvP couch game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the idea that you would compete with somebody in that way on the same screen wasn't a lot of that back then. Like, it was kind of low. I suppose you go all the way back to combat on this 2600 and say, well, sure, you could do that there. But I don't know. This there for whatever reason, my memory of this game does have a lot of stuff attached to it. Like everyone felt like it was a step up. It was a weird upgrade.
Yes.
It did things other yes. games weren't doing. It was ahead of its time. You know, that kind of stuff.
Ahead of its time. I always liked that term.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you're like unless you're a worm with called time, and then you're just the head of the time and you're not the bum.
Oh.
You don't want to be
weird. But if somebody chops you in half, do you become two times?
If it grows back, yeah, then you're two times, two head time.
If it grows back, what if it doesn't grow back?
Oh, I don't know.
Is this halftime?
You know, I've been thinking a lot about Dune because I saw the new Dune sequel and it's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I loved every freaking second of it, but it always makes me wonder if you cut one of them sandworms in half, would you now have two worms?
You know? I don't think that's how those work.
I don't know.
I think they're more like snakes, right? They're less like they're not even like really any worms. I think we just called them worms because they don't like because
they look
don't like worms.
Well, they look like
they're
more
worms. Like tubes.
They're like tubes.
They're tubes.
Well, yeah. So are worms, kind of. They got
but worms they squeeze more. You can if you ever stretched a worm, I mean, they get really flat.
That's true.
But sandworms seem kind of solid and tubular, more like a creature from the ocean or something. What do they call them? The tubulars, what they call those dang things that are tubes.
I don't know what that is, but I do
know. I'm talking about ocean tubes.
Ocean, you know
talking about.
Oh, sure. Ocean tubes. Have you not seen part two yet? You need to go.
I haven't seen it yet. Unfortunately, I was ready to go. And I was thinking this past week I was going to go and I was like, I'm going to go. And I was like, and I wanted to make sure before I went and I didn't think anyone else in the household was interested in seeing it. But I did a quick check before I left. I said, I'm thinking about going to see Dune this weekend, but I see you guys are already got plans. Do you want me to wait? And they said, with Dune 2. And I was like, oh, that Timothy Chalamet thing. And I was like, oh Jesus, they want to go see it. I guess they'll have to wait.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. I'm waiting. Dang it. To Charlie and the Chocolate Factory or whatever that one was that got them all interested.
Did we ever do, I'm looking right now. I don't think I can find it. We've referenced it with other games. Like when we talked about Warcraft and Command and Conquer, we've never done the Dune 2 video game retrospective.
No, we haven't. And those are some really weird
games. They're really good. I mean, it's considered, Dune 2 is considered the grandfather of RTSs. Like RTSs sprung from that thing. We should probably, given all this hype right now around Dune.
Smart.
Yeah.
Maybe we do this and then we hop over to Dune. We do.
Yep. And then we kick that other one further down the street until we're ready to do it. What was the other one? I don't even remember now. What was the one we were going to?
System Shock.
Oh, System Shock.
Yeah. We try to switch up between, you know, things that interest us, things that are, you know, having anniversaries, like 30-year anniversaries. We try to hit things that people are clamoring for. And just, man, it's just like, I really personally just want to play System Shock because I haven't revisited. So it's kind of like one of those things that I want to do.
Yeah,
is it really important? It's just a 30-year anniversary this year.
Are you going to play that the redo thing?
Remaster? I am. I played it early. And I really like what was going on, the early stuff. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why, because I was wanting to get a chance to go back and play that a little bit. It's just, you know, it's nostalgia more than anything, Scott. It really is.
I get it.
It's not the only reason to do a show, but yeah.
That's true. Now, look, some of you may have been a kid in the 05. And if you were, well, you were lucky enough to have a Xbox One original. I don't know if it's ended up on PS2, did it? It might have.
I can't. I think PS2. Yeah, I think it. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think it was on PS2.
Most of that stuff ended up there. Anyway, Spy versus Spy 2. Or sorry, it was just called Spy versus Spy. 2005 video game. It's okay. It's not the same. I went and watched a bunch of video. This is more of a platformer, third person thing. Where I don't know. This is not what you signed up for.
No, it's not interesting like the other. It's just an okay game. Like Scott says, the first one kind of innovative. This one's just kind of, hey, let's take some things you already kind of have and throw Spy versus Spy in there. And, you know, a couple little, you know, we'll do a couple little nods and it'll be great.
Yeah, it's just another platformer, really. Yeah, 3D third person platformer, which I'm not saying those are bad. But
And if it was the one that spoke to you because there were so many of them. Nothing wrong with that. If it's your favorite one of these, that's fine.
Yeah.
There's plenty of them.
Yeah, they're totally fine. But we wanted to at least mention that exists. Did not sell very well. So there's that.
Yeah, that's right.
Also, I worry there's a generational gap there. A lot of people don't know Spy versus Spy. And
right.
You let that IP languish long enough, people are never going to know what it is. So
The Mad magazines only appear occasionally now is kind of special edition kind of thing. So you can still occasionally purchase a Mad magazine. I actually received one a couple of Christmases ago from my my papa. He was at the grocery store and saw one. He said, "Oh, Brian likes these." And I was like, "Yeah, I do."
I thought you could still get those. I thought you could still subscribe and get. Oh, it's 6 issues per year. That's
yeah. It's like 6 issues per year, and it's I don't even know if it's a solid 6 issues.
Because there was a while during high school, or I think I was getting it right. Like twice a month or something.
Oh yeah. I used to get it all the freaking time. I couldn't get enough. Matter of fact, I couldn't get enough so much so that I decided to also subscribe to Cracked.
Yeah.
And so I had just anytime I could get that irreverent humor in me, I was down.
Yeah. Looks like they still got some stuff, but it ain't what it used to be, unfortunately.
No. Nope,
times change.
What it used to be.
Yep. As Garage Hellscream's friend or Garage Hellscream once famously said, times change.
Yeah. Mad Magazine filled a niche that was later not necessary to fill it exclusively because the things laxed. The Comics Code of Authority. It really took his first big hit when Stan Lee did his drug issue of when Nixon asked Stan Lee to do the drug issue for Spider-Man.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
And the Comics Code Authority was like, nope, this doesn't fit in with our code. Mm. And then they said, too bad, Nixon said. And so they put it with no label on it. And it went out, did well. And so that was the opening salvo. That was the end of what that would be. So that was fun.
Different times, different place.
Different times.
It's fun to go back and look. All right. Well, we're going to move on now to this.
Destroy it.
Time to play Guess Our Game. We got these new rules now. In fact, we've even refined them further. The way this works is we're both going to play some audio from an old game and try to get each other to guess what it is. We only get 2 bits of information now. The platform and the year, and that's it.
A 1 and a 0.
Yep. Platform and year. That's it. Platform being the console it was on or the arcade machine it was on or whatever it was. And then the year it came out, and then it's multiple choice from there. We have 4 choices each. Hilariously, I didn't even look at yours before I did mine.
I know. We have at least one that's the same. I almost used a second one that you used. True story.
Really? Because we are so close, and this is going to be insane. So we're going to give it a shot. Chad, you can also guess and have fun right along with us. Because we always do, and I'm sure 5 of you are already saying Choplifter of some sort.
Yeah. Choplifter is definitely hitting the chat room.
That's a chat room just what they do.
Joke.
I'll start with my audio. This is your information. It is in the arcade, and it was from 1983.
Ooh, I was alive then.
You were alive then. So was I. Yeah. Here it is.
Johnny Never Fine.
Think of that. Any ideas yet?
I like it. No, you haven't given my multiple choice.
I'll give you your stuff. Here's your multiple choice.
I'm not going to expand my brain until I've been given the choices.
Yeah, I got to remember this. Here are your choices. Is it A, Gradius?
Okay.
Or is it pronounced Gradius? I don't actually know.
I say Gradius, but I think you're probably right.
All right. Gradius. B, Gradius. Blazing Star. C, Xevious.
Oh, that's super Xevious.
Or D, R-Type. And for the record, I would mean R-Type 1 because R-Type 2, 3, and on and beyond were all way later than this.
So if
that helps you at all. So Gradius, Blazing Star, Xevious, or R-Type?
Well, I'm...
Okay, and as you can tell, these are all shooters. I should mention that. So top-down shooters. Yeah,
which makes sense because that's what I'm hearing right now. It sounds like a shooter. If you hadn't have told me that's the reason why the genre wasn't necessary, right?
Right.
Because I can usually guess that.
Yeah.
A, Gradius, B, Blazing Star, C, Xevious, or D, R-Type. I don't think it's R-Type. Pretty sure it's not R-Type. Pretty sure it's not Gradius. Don't really know what Blazing Star is, so I'm going to go C, Xevious.
Let's find out if you are correct. Is it C, Xevious? Is it? It is. It's Xevious. Well done. Nicely done. I was sure you were going to not get that right. But I
don't know what Blazing Star is. I don't... No, that
Blazing
one.
Star is not even as old. I think it's 90 something, but it's a very similar game. So I thought I could.
I'm pretty familiar with the other ones. I mean, I've played those this year.
Yeah, I like these kind of games. I'm a fan.
Yeah.
Brian, yours is all lined up as well. Tell me what year, what platform, what are we doing?
minus 3 years later, also at the arcade.
Yeah.
You've left the arcade for a few years. You're like, you come back as the arcade or the video game thing has crashed already in 84.
Yeah.
And so you're back at the arcade and you're trying to figure out if this is A, Twin Cobra, B, Life Force, C, Gradius, or D, Dragon Spirit.
All right, here we go.
Destroy them all.
Oh, I love the voice.
Stomach, muscles,
All right, so 86.
86.
Destroy a violent antibiotics. The hell is that? All right. Oh, that's interesting. Destroy antibiotics. Is it like an inner space kind of deal? Okay. Twin Cobra, I'm going to say no. I don't know what that is.
Right.
Gradius, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Possibly, but not. I don't think so. Dragon Spirit, I'm not sure what that is. So I think I'm going to go with, this is the only hint I have here, is it said, the voice said, kill the antibiotics. And there's one of these is Life Force, which is medically adjacent. So I'm going to say B, Life Force.
The answer is B. Could you just give yourself a ding? You got it.
Woo!
It is B, Life Force. However, the same people who brought you Gradius the year before brought you Life Force. So if it sounded familiar, there's a reason.
I'm going to look this up because I don't think I've ever played a game called Life Force. Or maybe I haven't. I just don't remember. Here we go. Long play Life Force. Let's take a look here, chat. We can all look at it together here. Who made this?
Gradius.
Konami published
Konami.
It. Or is it Kiyonami? What's wrong with that K? That's effed. All right. Let's see. Skip ahead some. Yeah. Story. I remember this.
I remember Konami's Life Force.
There's a boss fight with a brain. I totally remember this shit.
Yeah. Isn't this sexy?
Yep. I totally remember it. I don't remember if it was good. Was it good? I did put quarters in it.
I read that some people like it.
Okay.
Not as well known as Gradius. Gradius.
Gradius. Gradius.
But yes.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, we both did it this week. Congratulations to us.
Woohoo. Look at us.
We both get dings. That's fantastic. And nobody got this. Except the audience who got it all wrong. So well done, everybody.
I almost played you the Japanese version. You know what? I should give you some bonus points. If you can tell me what the Japanese name was of Life Force, you'll get some bonus points. What do you think about that?
Okay. What would they do? Unicorn overload. No, I'm just kidding. hold on. Bio fight.
That's a good one. No, they went with a salamander.
Why? Is this in a salamander's body? This whole thing happens in a salamander and a lizard?
I don't know. I didn't go that deep, but that is hilarious.
That's effed up. Why? Why? Yeah. I must know.
Better question yet. Why did we call it Life Force? I don't know.
Salamander arcade. I mean, look at this. Why though? Well, it's more of a question of why, of course, they renamed it to come here because we would have all said, why are you calling this a salamander?
I don't want to play nothing. Salamander, is that like centipede? They changed it in the U.S. by adding the plot that establishes that it's a giant alien life form, which is infected by a strain of bacteria.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. This is interesting. So yeah, there it is. Oh, you know what else is interesting? It's also it's a spinoff of Gradius. It's like part of that world.
That's what I was saying.
Did you just say that? I missed that.
Yeah.
How about this?
Who brought you that?
Do you know they also renamed Contra? What do you think Contra was called before in Japan?
Contra was called Q-Pew-Ju-Pew.
Exactly right. No need to dig further. No, it's Contoro with a K, Contora.
Oh, that makes sense. That makes sense if I had to use my brain a little bit, if I had to use a little more of my brain.
Yeah. I mean, Contra definitely leaned into some political goings on here.
Right.
In America at the time. So it's funny that they did that, but
yes.
Contoro. All right, that's it for that. Let's now move on to some listener feedback where we get to hear from you.
Welcome to the Treasure Room.
Yes, that's right. We get emails and texts and that sort of thing. This is a text, 801-471-0462. This came to us saying the following. Hey, Scott and Brian, you guys should check out Godzilla 2 War of the Monsters on the Nintendo Entertainment System. It's a turn-based tactics-like Advance Wars type game where you control an army and fight Godzilla and other creatures. Pretty good for 92, he says.
Not bad.
Never heard of this.
Not bad at all.
Let's look it up so we can show
off. Looks like Dig Dug. What am I looking at here?
Well, I mean, it's a great question, right?
It does like an overworld. Yeah, okay. Look, that's pretty cool.
Oh, it's very, that's very, yeah. What do you call it? Advance Wars.
Yes.
The way that this stuff's laid out here, let me pull one up that I can actually
show. War of the Monsters.
Oh, come on. Stop doing this, internet.
Die, Godzilla.
There we go. So as you can see, we've got a top-down map. We got, zoom that in a little. Look, you got your units.
If there's no Godzuki in this, I'm out.
I'd be kind of curious to play this. Maybe I'll check this out. I'm sure it's not as great as, you know, it's not going to be Advance Wars.
It's not Advance Wars, but I mean, if suddenly a giant pixelated Godzilla shows up, I'm down. If it does, I'm going to be mad. Yeah. They got Rodan in here.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah. That looks all right.
Ghidorah is in it. Mothra. Yes. Yep.
This was endorsed by the Toho company that makes movies. Looking at a box here, a big old box with a big old red, cool looking lizard.
Got that Nintendo's seal of quality approval.
Yeah.
Not approved by the Comics Code Authority, but still.
Yeah, that must be good.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else can I see on this? Yeah. Was it reviewed well? That's what I'm trying to find. I can't
Gojira.
Gojira. Okay, here we go.
Wrath of the Monsters.
It was received.
By mail.
It doesn't say what the reception was. Can we get like a score? Yeah, I can't find reviews for it.
Godzilla.
I mean, there is a page for it everywhere, but nobody's got reviews, so I don't know if it was received well or not.
No one's ever played it, but this is interesting. Thank you for doing that. Wait, is there like some kind of, oh my God, there's some kind of watching some video of it. There's some kind of cutscene where you get to see Godzilla. That's just hot. What? I like it.
No way. 8-bit looking Godzilla.
Now, let me see here. I can get to the,
how many colors they got in there? Probably hardly all of them.
Every one of them that Nintendo had, they used it.
Godzilla 2.
But they are little animated little Godzilla pixels and stuff and the little monsters and stuff. But the load screen has a,
what a world we live in where I can just look this shit up anytime I want.
Yeah,
I love it. That's interesting. Let's see, move it along the. You know, it's a lot like,
Advance Wars.
This is a lot like Advance Wars, and then the fighting looks like they actually show. Yeah, they show the thing.
Monsters show up. Yeah,
this is cool.
Little jets. Jets there to shoot the Gojira. Yeah,
the Gojira.
Gojira.
Kind of interested. Kind of want to check it out. I'll see what I can see. We also got an email. This email came to us at playretroshow@gmail.com. This is from J-Mac from Gilbert, Arizona.
Oh, yes. I like that place.
Didn't you used to live near there? You were near there for a while.
I did. I lived Ahwatukee, which is not that far from Gilbert.
Yep. Gilbert wrote in. J-Mac from Gilbert wrote in. Gilbert Gottfried wrote in. He says, hi, Play Retro. Love the show. Usually listen while I'm on my exercise bike playing the Steam Deck you made me buy.
Oh, you're welcome.
March 9th and 10th is ZapCon in Mesa, Arizona. I'm counting down the days, just like you did as kids, for Christmas. Over 300 arcade and pinball games free to play all weekend, plus the retro lounge with lots of old TVs, retro consoles. Last ZapCon I logged 22 hours over 2 days. That's pretty good.
Nice.
He sent us a link to all the games that they're going to have there. There will be lots of Joust and Spy Hunter, he says, calling those Play Retro gems. Says, it's not retro, but I have a Killer Queen tournament on Saturday. That game is so fun. I mean, it's basically Joust, multiplayer Joust. It's very good.
Yeah, I like it.
Check it out, you guys. Another event to put on your radar here.
ZapCon.
Look at all that. Wow. That's a lot.
This is cool. Yeah, I'm down with this.
Yeah,
I'm digging into it now.
Location.
Oh, it's almost that time again, isn't it? It's time for us to start heading to the cons.
Yeah.
Spring is almost here.
Yeah.
We're going to have our spring cons and then our summer and fall cons. I'm getting very excited.
Tickets aren't bad. $55 for a weekend for an adult.
55 bits. Bits. I prefer to be bits.
That's not a bad price.
No, it's not.
I'd go if I lived there. I totally would. I'd go there in a heartbeat. Report back. Tell us anything cool you saw there, J-Mac.
Gilbert's just ribbed the road from where I used to live. We used to drive through that way all the time.
I mean, it's technically outskirt of Mesa, right? It's all part of Mesa's.
Yeah, it's all on.
Suburbs of Mesa.
We should go. We should go. I would love to go.
That's it for that. Our next discussion is going to be very last minute. We've made this change in lieu of the passing, the untimely passing of Akira Toriyama. Mm-hmm. We are going to talk about a game that bears his artwork and a ton of it. He was directly involved in designing and helping make that game happen. That game being Chrono Trigger for the Super Nintendo Entertainment System. And there's a lot of talk right now of a remake of that happening soon.
Yes.
If Square has their way, they will do that. I don't know. Maybe. I really like what they did with the Final Fantasy remakes, the 7 remakes. So I would actually be down for that. Either way, you have both games in your life. You can play it either way. So anyway, we're going to talk about it. Chrono Trigger, big deal, that game. And we'll talk about it, about his influence, and why his art style is so beloved and why people are like legit sad today about his passing. It's kind of a...
Yeah. Makes sense.
My entire feed on all my social stuff is all about him today. All of it.
Oh, yeah. Because people love this stuff. Loved him too. So, yeah.
There's either Dune stuff or Toriyama posts. That's it.
Yes. Yes, that was it.
That's it for me. All right. That'll be next week. So watch for that coming soon. In the meantime, want to thank some patrons for being a part of our world. People like Craig Watson, Chris B., Tony Press. That sounds like a newspaper group or something. Right. The Tony Press.
Well, subscribe to Tony's Press.
That's right. TonyPress.press. Anyway, patreon.com/playretro is where you go support us there. We really appreciate it. No commercials ever. You'll get pre-show content every week. Lots of reasons to join and none not to. So join us today. patreon.com/playretro.
I realized I didn't post the Unreal report.
Oh, shit.
In the notes.
Yeah, you didn't put it in the notes today. You want to do that real quick?
I copied it, but I didn't paste it.
Well, let's do it. Let's do one. So today we're playing 2K4 after the show. Very excited.
Right.
Let's get that going.
Here's our top five on the UT99 Unreal Tournament 99. Flap Jackson, Denier, Surge, Upright Knight, and at number five is Frog Pants.
Yeah, still in the top five though. That's good.
Yeah, not bad. Try to Kill Everyone still at top. Brack Flack moving in, I believe, to number two. Frog Pants at number three. These are all UT 2004. This is what we're playing tonight. Flap Jackson at number four, and Shock Effect grabbing number five. That's me
grabbing that five. Yo,
grabbing that five spot,
grabbing that shit.
And as always, we've been playing on Monday nights the Unreal Tournament 99, and which is the Game of the Year edition, and then we play UT 2K4 on Friday nights, and you can find all the information on that at retrogib.com. Yep. We got some maps we're going to be using. Dreary was a favorite this past Monday for 99. We're going to try to get that put into the 2K4.
So yeah, we put that in 04 tonight. Y'all are in trouble. It's going to be awesome.
You in trouble, yo.
Anyway, that's all coming up here shortly for those who want to stick around and watch that live. And that'll probably be what time do we usually do that?
We usually do that at about, we usually wait until 6:30, but we could start at sooner.
Well, what is it? What time is it there at 3
my time? It is 5 p.m. my time. So
let's do 6 your time. How about that?
In 1 hour.
Yeah, 4 my time. That'll be how long I need to get this thing posted and ready.
Right.
So that would work. You want to do that? Does that sound right to you? Okay.
That's fine to go to me,
That's
friend.
What we are going to do. That's going to do it for us. Thank you all for listening. Do me a favor. Between now and next week, please go play something retro, and we'll see you then.
Get more at frogpants.com.
Again, there's no commercial, so I play this. There you go.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/ upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.